Welcome to Lunchtime Classics on 90.5 FM WUOL. Broadcasting live from WUOL's performance studio on 4th Street in downtown Louisville. Now, here's your host, Alan Brandt.
Hello and welcome to another Lunchtime Classics. We're live in the studio here at the performance studio at Classical 90.5 on this Wednesday afternoon. And we're very pleased to welcome back members of the Louisville Orchestra. We've been doing a series of sorts with the members of the Louisville Orchestra as we celebrate the fine musicianship that the individuals bring to the group. And we've got a treat for you today. First off, I'd like to thank Davis Jewelers. They're sponsoring our program today, Davis Jewelers on Hurstbourne Lane. And until recently, the woman that will be playing the violin today was known to me simply as the tall brunette in the back of the orchestra. But she has a name now, and I'm very glad to get to know her, as I'm sure you will too. Tamara Meineke is our violin performer today. And she's joined by pianist Kristen Kinman. They'll be introducing their pieces, and we'll talk to the artists a little later in the program to find out a little bit more about them. But please welcome violinist Tamara Meineke and pianist Kristen Kinman.
Thank you. We're so pleased you're here. We'll begin our program today with this beautiful sonata by Mozart in two movements. It's a rather early sonata, number 3 in C major, Kirchhollisting 303. The first movement is a sort of combination slow-fast, slow-fast, and the second movement has a very unusual marking, tempo diminuetto. So here is a beautiful sonata in C major by Mozart. Thank you. Next, I would like to play some Bach for you. I'll be playing the first three movements of the E major partita for violin alone by Bach. I'll play the preludio, the lure, and the gavotte and rondo. Partita just is a term that means a collection of dances. That's all it means. And the first movement in this particular collection is a brilliant prelude in the noty Italian style. So it's a lot of fast notes, not chords like a German or maybe even French Baroque might be. The second movement, the lure, is quite an unusual dance. There aren't so many examples of it that I could find, but it is a dance from the French Baroque, again, that's a slow, dignified jig, apparently from Normandy. The third movement, the gavotte, also French Baroque, originally a country rustic dance, sometimes with bagpipes or whatever the French equivalent of bagpipes is. And you will hear the suggestion of drones in this gavotte, which Bach, never one to let well enough alone, has cleverly written in a rondo form. So here are three movements from the E major partita of Bach, preludio, lure, and gavotte and rondo. Thank you. continue with the loose theme of dance that we have set up with the Romanian folk dances by Béla Bartók. Bartók was Hungarian, of course, but actually he was born in a small town that later, with the redrawing of the map of Europe, became part of Romania. And he lived at a time when, musically speaking, the attitude was the only good music is Austrian and German music. And he became involved with the political movement in 1903 in his country, anti-Austria nationalism. And the very next year, he happened to hear a Transylvanian servant girl sing a folk song from her home, and he was blown away by it. He wrote it down on the spot. And after that, he would spend every summer, he was a professor of music at the university, he spent every summer until, 1914, on these collecting trips in mostly the mountains, in the rural parts. And he mostly concentrated on Hungary, but he got further abroad, too. He wrote these things down faithfully, and he also used the early recording equipment of the time. All that material became fully incorporated into the rest of his compositions. But these are really quite simple and straightforward. It's the actual music. There are six or seven dances, depending on how you count them. The last three run together. And I will not attempt to say what they are called, because you do not want to hear me try to speak Romanian. I'm going to tune my fiddle up just a bit, and then here are the Romanian folk dances by Béla Bartók. Thank you.
And if you've just joined us, we're live in the performance studio here at Classical 90.5 WOL, and you've heard violinist Tamara Meineke and pianist Kristen Kinman. They're going to be joining me now so we can get to know them a little better. We have a full schedule through the end of this short end of the year, so please check our website at WOL.org and click on Lunchtime Classics. You can see our schedule for there and for what's coming up in 2008. Well, welcome, Tamara and Kristen. Thanks for being here. If you step a little closer to the microphone. Thank you.
Thank you so much for inviting us.
Well, it's our pleasure to have you here. Now, Tamara, you're with the Louisville Orchestra in the violin section, of course. But you've been here for what,
10 years.
10 years.
My first job was in the Nashville Symphony Orchestra. I was there for 6 years. And then I came here in 97.
And where did you grow up?
I grew up everywhere because my father is a doctor in the U.S. Navy.
Oh, okay.
So at one point, I think I'd had 15 violin teachers in 13 years, from us moving and from the teachers moving.
Well, I could see some disadvantages with that, but
distinct disadvantages,
perhaps,
yes.
An advantage where you picked up all the best of each tutor, right?
You could think of it that way, yes.
Let's say that. Well, you're obviously a quality performer. Kristen, I know you told me before the performance here that you're a student of Luvisi.
Yes, I came here in 96, and I received my undergrad and my master's degrees with him. So I was very privileged to have the opportunity to work with him, and now I'm here to stay. So,
now, as an artist, as a musical performer, is this a busy time of year for pianists?
It is a busy time. More busy, I think, for my husband, who's a jazz musician. He seems to be gigging a lot. But yes, it does get pretty busy this time of year.
Now, the orchestra, Tamara, is involved with the Nutcracker, right?
You better believe it.
And so you're doing that this month?
We're doing a whole lot of Nutcracker. And as if 12 or 13 performances weren't enough, our associate conductor added a whole section of the Nutcracker to our other Christmas performances. So I'd say I could play it in my sleep.
I bet you do at times. So, now, as artists, where you have to make money, you have to earn a living, so you do gigs, you do your work with the orchestra, Tamara. When you have an opportunity like you had today to be able to play Bartok and Mozart and Bach on a program, how often does that chance come about for you, for both of you?
About as often as we want it to, I think.
Really?
Yes, but this year we've had a few opportunities to play together, which has been good. This will be the third time that we've done this program.
We've made the opportunities for ourselves.
Oh, good.
Actually, we got on a concert series in North Carolina in April. Then we did one just for fun here. It's crazy because we are both mothers of little bitty children, mm-hmm. and we're going around putting pressure on ourselves by playing recitals. But it's fun and it's worth it, isn't it?
It is.
To get to play, out.
Mm-hmm. And that's the artist in you too. I mean, I think it's an admirable quality that you're always wanting to stretch and not just make ends meet and take care of the kids, but also to expand artistically. I think that's a noble cause. So you would agree.
Yes, we're
that
nodding.
Wasn't a question, that was just a statement.
We think you're very wise.
Well, let's pause and ponder that for a second. Oh, well, your commentary has been very interesting, too, about the program. How did you both decide on the program?
Well, what I did is I really wanted to play the Ives. When I was an undergraduate, one of my teachers was this was at a liberal arts college, not a conservatory, but one of my teachers was a complete Ives nut, and he begged me to play this sonata with him, and I did, and I wrote a little undergraduate seminar paper on it.
Yeah.
So I really wanted to play it with Kristen because she's fantastic, but she said it's the hardest thing she's ever had to prepare, notes and ensemble. So what I did is I said, if you'll play the Ives with me, I'll take up 25 minutes in the program by playing unaccompanied Bach. So that's how the Bach got on the program.
Okay.
And what about the rest of it?
Well, I decided on the Mozart because I really love Mozart and studied with Mr. Luvisi, who also is a wonderful artistic player of Mozart,
yes.
among other things. So So I chose that, and then we kind of pieced together the rest of the program together just to fill in the gaps.
So what is it about the Ives that is so challenging on the keyboard?
Well, it's very awkward to play. There are many places where it's just impossible to play what he wrote, so you just kind of have to make, you know, your best judgment as to what to leave out. And and rhythmically, it's extremely challenging. That's probably the most challenging part is rhythmically. There's just all kinds of stuff going on in the solo part, but then also, well, in the piano part, excuse me, but also then putting the two parts together is a big challenge.
Sometimes we're playing in different meters, and frequently we're playing in different keys, and sometimes we're not playing the same tune at the same time, and that's on purpose.
Right. Well, it sounds like a good segue to go to the Charles Ives. So once again, Lunchtime Classics, today presented by Davis Jewelers. Please welcome back from Louisville Orchestra, Tamara Meineke, and pianist Kristen Kinman.
Thank you. I suspect that not many of you have played Ives or played this sonata, so how about a little introductory tour to it?
Yeah.
Ives lived, he was an American composer, a New Englander, from Connecticut, but I'm forgetting which town, Danbury, who lived from 1874 to 1954. And in his lifetime, he was completely unappreciated. In fact, he was hated by musicians. One concertmaster said to him, "If you like this stuff," meaning this very sonata, "then you must hate Brahms." I'd say that's a little discouraging. He had a job as a church organist, but he quit it on his own because he felt that it wasn't fair to the congregation. He wanted to play the hymns the way he wanted to play them, and they were a captive audience. And he just felt that wasn't fair to them. So he worked in the insurance industry in New York City. In fact, I've heard that he invented the concept of life insurance. Is that possible? I don't know. I'm not a business historian. In any case, the musical atmosphere of the time was the same as what Bartok was dealing with in Europe. It's got to be German. It's got to sound like Brahms or Beethoven or Mozart. And his professor at Yale, his professor of composition, Horatio Parker, was definitely part of that tradition. He thought the same thing. Ives, on the other hand, grew up in a house. His dad was the conductor of a brass band. So he grew up, he said once that sometimes when he gets an idea for a new composition, it's really a brass band with wings on it. His dad used to do, just for fun, you know, the family around the family piano, he would play a tune in one key and make them sing it in a different key. Just a fun little family activity. Or he'd play a scale in one key and they'd have to sing a scale in another key. Or he'd play one tune and they'd sing a different tune. You get the idea. So he came by his love of dissonance and bitonality and polyrhythm honestly. He also, like Bartok, believed in the value of vernacular music. Not just the high art stuff, but the pop tunes, the dance tunes. And because he was such an old fuddy-duddy, a lot of his pop tunes that he liked were actually from the generation before his. So Ives did not get along so well with his composition teacher, and he wrote a letter to his dad about it, and his dad wrote back, "Tell Parker," that's the professor, "that every dissonance doesn't need to resolve if it doesn't happen to feel like it, any more than every horse should have its tail bobbed just because it is the prevailing fashion." So there. On to the second sonata, a traditional form in three movements, slow, fast, and slow, and then he does wacky things with it. Each movement has a title. That's hardly traditional. The first movement, called Autumn, is based on a hymn. It opens with a slow, quiet theme, which you hear again halfway through, but most of the material is based on this hymn, Autumn. is in one of its appearances in the sonata. Did you catch that?
No.
The third movement is called The Revival. It's based on a hymn called Nettleton, which you might know as Come Thou Fount of Every Blessing. Do you recognize that? So, the revival, there's a cultural religious phenomenon called the Second Great Awakening, sweeping the country, and tent religious revival meetings were part of this. I suppose that's why he's called this movement The Revival. It starts very quietly, mystically, you might say, and ends in a frenzy of emotion. The second movement, the middle movement, is called In the Barn. And if you read the learned commentaries, they all say, oh, it's supposed to sound like a barn dance. Well, I do traditional folk dance, and I'm here to tell you, it's not going to happen. You cannot dance to this stuff. I really think it sounds like some old guys sitting in a circle in the barn, drinking moonshine and having a jam session all night long. Here's the fiddle tune Money Musk as it really sounds. And here's part of Sailor's Hornpipe. Here's what those tunes sound like in one of their appearances in the sonata. You get the idea? Here's another tune. I'll play the A part of the White Cockade. Now here it is as transmuted by Ives, along with another fiddle tune that I think you're going to recognize. Recognize Turkey in the Straw there? I think it's a sort of drunken, moonshiny Turkey in the Straw. Then, halfway through this so-called barn dance, Ives drops in one of the most popular tunes from the Civil War, The Battle Cry of Freedom. Do you know that tune? Recognize it maybe from the Civil War show. Of all things, that tune is heard as a sweet, sentimental waltz in its first appearance in the sonata, and then later it sounds like this. So let's play it together. Fun to play. It really is. We hope that you enjoy the three movements of the second sonata for violin and piano by Ives. Those movements are Autumn, In the Barn, and The Revival. Thank you.
Thank you.
was wonderful and a great description, Tamara. Thank you so much. Tamara Meineke, violin, and Kristen Kinman, piano. You make a great duo. I'd like to invite you back next year if you're willing and have a new program.
We'll be there.
Great. Thank you. Once again, Tamara Meineke, violin, and Kristen Kinman. I'm so grateful to hear premieres on Lunchtime Classics with these artists that are based right here in Louisville, and they're such high quality. We're just so lucky to have them here, and thanks again. It's just magnificent. This is Lunchtime Classics, and for our complete season, go online to WOL.org. I'd like to thank the Louisville Orchestra. I'd like to thank Andrew High, who was our audio engineer, and the audience, both live in the studio and listening right now, and especially our fantastic performers today. Thanks so much, and see you next time.